Now, that was the theme song from the past CBS television series Joan of Arcadia, which was the inspiration for Lee Bowman's first book, as a matter of fact. So how about that? Lee Bowman, MD, is the author of God at the Speed of Light, Window to God, the Akashic Light as well. He's our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast, beginning his spiritual journey as a skeptic. He's changed now. His latest work is called The Seagull Project, a black hole science adventure to the center of our galaxy. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I just told you a little bit about Lee Bowman. He is, of course, the noted author of The Seagull Project, a black hole science adventure to the center of our galaxy. Lee Bowman on Coast to Coast. Hey, Lee, how are you?
I'm good, George. How are you this evening?
Good. I'm looking forward to chatting with you tonight. Fascinating.
Well, thank you so much for having me back.
You know, when you talked to me last, which was a little over a year ago, we were getting into some of your work and how you had changed from being a skeptic to where you are today. Tell us a little bit, first of all, about your background, because that's important as we get into tonight.
Well, yes, because my training is not as a physicist, which many people imply from my writings. My doctorate is actually as a medical doctor. I practiced internal medicine and geriatrics in Pennsylvania for about 13 years and got into the administrative side of medicine. But what happened was back in the 1970s, I declared myself as an atheist agnostic because of my scientific training in undergraduate school at Vanderbilt. And then I went to medical school where all of that was reinforced, you know, through the scientific method and what have you. I was just never anyone who could accept the concept of God based upon faith alone. I was definitely a man of science. It was science or nothing with me. So that was where I found myself in the 1970s. Being in the practice of medicine, however, I became interested when Raymond Moody first published his Life After Life, which was, as you know, the first real book dealing with the near-death experience. I was just fascinated with that. Through my practice of internal medicine and geriatrics, and my wife, who is also an emergency room physician, mm-hmm. we both would talk about, you know, resuscitating patients and some of the experiences we had, and we could just never explain a lot of the occurrences. So Raymond Moody's book answered so many of those questions. At about the same time, I was also fascinated with Albert Einstein. I found there were so many supernatural aspects to his theory of relativity. Light was basically the cornerstone to his theory of relativity, just as the being of light was the central element to the near-death experience. I was fascinated, but didn't quite understand the connection, you know, if there was one. So I kept reading. I kept being fascinated through the scientific revelations that were coming through with these readings. And at some point in time, I finally made the connection. And that connection was that I realized, you know, Christ in the New Testament for Christians was always making the declaration, I am the light of the world. Similarly, in the Old Testament, God, his prophets, whether you want to look at Moses, who looked at the burning bush, you know, on the mountain, God was always described in terms of light. What I found was, as I continued the research into religion, was every major religion across the planet also described God in terms of light. And I think that was my eureka moment when I made the conclusion that I no longer felt that these comparisons of God and light were metaphorical. That was how I think most of us were brought up, was that these were metaphors, mm-hmm. by no means were we to take them literally. But through quantum physics and the near-death experience, I became convinced that they were indeed literal. And that was basically the moment in time where I made the conversion from an atheist into a believer.
Was it tough for you to do that?
Well, not really.
I mean, you didn't fight yourself?
No, my upbringing through my parents, they were both Christians. My upbringing was as a Christian. And I think I, back in my mind, had the wish to want to believe in God, because I think there's a lot of comfort there.
Sure.
But I couldn't. I just couldn't bring myself around to it, knowing all the scientific arguments that existed, you know, in the mid-1970s. So, no, it really was not a difficult decision for me. In fact, I found it very comforting.
Your recent work, the Seagull Project, which we're going to talk about tonight, is an adventure story with, I think, a lot of basis behind it, a lot of possible truth behind it. You know, science is telling us that there's a huge black hole right in the center of our galaxy, and that's what you somehow key in on.
Yes.
Tell me about that tie-in.
Well, I've always wanted, ever since God at the Speed of Light came out in 2002, I felt that I was missing, whether you want to call it a marketing opportunity or a witnessing opportunity to be able to get my concepts of science and its support for a higher being to, you know, all the people out there that read science fiction but rarely would read non-fictional books such as my first three books. So I wanted to avail that information to them. Part of my research has really gotten me intimately involved with astronomy. In fact, part of my fantasy job now is that I actually give astronomy lectures on cruise ships.
Now, that's interesting.
Oh, it's my fantasy job.
And I bet you like cruises.
I love cruises.
You tied the two of them together.
Oh, I am so blessed. But at any rate, through my work in astronomy, I became fascinated with the fact that a supermassive black hole exists at the center of most galaxies. Indeed, with our own Milky Way galaxy, one is known to exist, which is approximately 3 million times the mass of our own sun. So it's a good-sized black hole. So I investigated what it would take for humans to be able to travel to this black hole and come back, and whether it was even possible. So that basically is the concept behind this book. I actually used real physics. I was able to bring some professors from nearby universities near Birmingham to actually help me and verify my physics calculations to make sure that everything was realistic in the book. So I've been very fortunate to be able to enlist their help and to be able to come up with what I feel is a very realistic science fiction adventure.
Is this black hole sucking in all kinds of things right now?
Absolutely. Just as you read on the internet, it is sucking in everything from matter to all forms of energy, including light.
Are we headed that way right now, and how long would it take?
No, we are not headed towards that black hole, but since you mentioned it, our galaxy actually is on a collision course with another galaxy.
Right.
That
happened once before, didn't it? I thought we were formed by the process of a collision with another galaxy.
I would not doubt that at all. I know we are certainly heading for Andromeda, and so that should be quite an adventure in a few billion years.
So the Andromeda strain may be real.
You never know.
Now, let's talk, you know, when you talk in terms of what this other energy is out there, this power that is out there. Is it, and how closely is it related to consciousness?
Oh, I feel that they're intricately related. You know, there are a lot of books out there that discuss fields and networks.
Lynn McTaggart's The Field.
Exactly,
yeah.
Which tie the universe from one end to the other through a network of energy. And I feel my research is completely compatible with those theories. Whether you want to call it light, and most people assume when you're talking about light, you're talking visible light.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, non-visible
light.
That's
not what you mean.
Yes, actually, non-visible light, which includes X-rays and gamma rays and TV rays, they're all described as being photons or particles or waves of light, just like visible light is. So this network is really electromagnetic radiation, well-proven, and all the supernatural elements that exist along with it, which do indeed connect one end of the universe to the other instantaneously, actually.
Do you believe this connection is and always has been around?
Well, it's been around since the formation of our universe.
Was it a simultaneous thing?
Well, if you look at the scientific theories, and again, that really is all they are at this point in time, probably within several seconds after the Big Bang, once light had separated from matter, that became true.
This light, would you call it supernatural or paranormal?
I think as humans, we do not truly understand the nature of light. And so from that standpoint, I consider light to be supernatural, spiritual, whatever adjectives you want to use. Most of us do not understand the true ramifications and the characteristics of physical light. What we have found, and again, most of these concepts are well established and proven in the at least the quantum physics arena, is that light indeed is everywhere throughout the universe. Some have actually made the bizarre argument that there is only one photon, only one wave of light, and it's everywhere. And when we can get into the details of that when you like, but the characteristics of light, its relationship to consciousness, and even stating that characteristics of light are very similar to how we describe the nature of God. They're just very intimate.
And it could be one and the same.
I believe that's an excellent possibility. The fact that quantum physics argues that physical light can be omnipresent or everywhere, can be omniscient and all-knowing, and omnipotent, all-powerful. Characteristics we have always used to describe God.
And I think what we need to do as we continue to talk about this is people need to stay away from the mental thought of light as light from a flashlight, for example, or something, because that's really not what you're talking about.
Well, it is and it isn't.
Right.
What is so difficult for us as humans to recognize is that when we observe light, and we see it traveling at a finite rate per second, we are trapped within the four dimensions of space and time, with time being the fourth dimension. Light, as we understand it, and again, it's been very well proven over and over again, light is not confined by the characteristic of time. So, you know, when we observe as humans light traveling from one region of the universe to another, and we know that it travels at 186,000 miles per second, for light, for which time does not exist, if you look at that and realize that, you know, as that light wave is traveling across the universe, that time does not exist for that light wave, you can actually extend the that concept and realize that for light, it can be everywhere in the universe at one time, which is a contradiction in terms for us humans, because we see it traveling, you know, at a finite rate. So for us humans, it's very difficult to grasp the concept that light exists outside of time.
Does it have personality? Does it have knowledge to create?
I definitely believe it has knowledge. Think of it, if we as humans, if we were light waves, and we could theoretically be everywhere in the universe at once, for that moment in time, we would know everything that was going on in the universe at that moment. Now, if you carried that one step further and made the, reinforced the concept that time does not exist for the light wave, another way of saying that is that for light, the past equals the present equals the future. So in another way of saying that is that light, not only is it everywhere, but it knows everything that's going on in every corner of the universe, not only now, but in the past, and theoretically in the future.
What made you make this connection between the light and the God?
Well, the fact that quantum physics so rigorously defended what I call the three omnis, the omnipresence, the omniscience, the omnipotence, those are obviously supernatural type traits that we would normally not associate with what we consider to be a non-living, you know, form out there in the universe. When I kept reading about the near-death experience and with my medical practice, the being of light in the near-death experience was always associated either with God for the Jewish persuasion, for Christ, for those of the Christian persuasion, and just as a guiding spirit for agnostics or atheists. And then add on to that the fact that God, throughout every major religion, is described in terms of light. At some point in time, I put one and one together and decided that, hey, you know, there is really something here, and I felt it was real.
Now, when people describe their near-death experiences, they always talk about seeing a light, or, you know, they transform into this light. They don't go in all the way, obviously. Is that what you're talking about here?
Yes. When they cross over on the other side, theoretically they're dead from the medical standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
They often see a light. It's not 100%, but it's certainly a common phenomenon. And they experience that light with God, Christ, or a guiding spirit. And when they are often met by family members, these family members or even deceased pets who sometimes greet them, they are often described also as light, but it's not as intense, it's not as bright as the light associated with God. So I do feel that when we cross over to the other side, that we will basically be spirits of light.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, Lee, when we come back. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Hey, those of you who are Streamlink members, don't forget tomorrow, Tuesday night, our chat, 8 p.m. Pacific time. The seats fill up fast. Come on in, Streamlink members, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Lee Bowman, our guest, doctor with a MD, not PhD. He's with us. Let's talk about near-death experiences and this going into the light, if we can, Lee. With so many things to talk about, including time travel a little bit later on. So they go into the light. what is it, another dimension, a force? What might it be?
Well, again, that would be pure speculation on my part, but I do feel it's a different dimension. I like to look at it more that we are going outside of our four dimensions. Probably, you know, we are going into a different dimension or different dimensions, plural, but we certainly seem to be going outside of our current four dimensions. We go into a realm where light seems to be one of the predominant features, and as I like to keep reminding my audiences and people who I speak with, that light exists outside of time, so we know that it is existing in a dimension of which we are not really familiar. And then, of course, you know, the question keeps arising, well, how is it then that we see light traveling at a certain rate of speed when it exists in a different dimension outside of time? And that does get rather confusing. But if you just keep in mind that it exists outside of our four dimensions, I think it's an easier concept to accept.
And it seems, you know, we talk about positive energy, negative energy. Light to me sounds positive. Negative, evil energy seems dark, doesn't it?
Well, it does. I have thought about that myself and haven't really been able to come up with any type of conclusions, certainly not any ones that are scientifically based. Whenever I'm confronted with that observation, I always like to tell people that, you know, when we describe darkness, we typically are talking about darkness as it refers to non-visible light. However, science argues, or doesn't argue, it basically tells us as a fact that even in the darkest void of outer space, there are more than 400 million photons of light per cubic meter, but we have to keep in mind it's non-visible light. It's other forms of radiation. So darkness becomes a relative thing because we associate it with visible light, and yet it is very full of non-visible light. So then arguments about evil and whatnot become a little confusing. Certainly, the Bible always talks about the absence of light, darkness being associated with Satan and evil. So I'm still struggling with that identity myself.
But it seems to me that, you know, when you tap into light, you also tap into this energy source. I mean, you've heard about, you know, healing hands of light.
Yeah.
I mean, everything that sounds positive seems to revolve around that. You know, put yourself, your aura is light.
Yes.
A good aura, a bad aura, a weak aura, a sick person, you don't have that light. You know, it's some people who say or claim to be able to see auras, see this glowing light around positive, healthy people. They don't see it around evil people or people who are ill. It just seems to be tied into this incredible burst of energy.
I agree, and I am certainly aware of those comparisons. What I have best been able to decipher is that if you go back to the near-death experience or other type of paranormal, similar type phenomenon, we typically see other spirits, and I'm talking about deceased spirits, as spirits of light. The best I've been able to gather is that when we are dead, we are going to continue existing as forms of consciousness with spirits of light. They're not going to be on the same order as that of God or Christ or, you know, those type of beings. But we are still beings of light. We are still learning. We are still growing. And as we continue to learn more and grow more, the intensity and brilliance of our own spirits will also increase. But again, that's the best that I've been able to put together from the research that I've done.
Do you think that this light is what we tap into for intuitive powers and things like that?
I do. I feel that, again, using quantum physics as one of my major bases, light is basically one of the, if not the only, type of cosmic consciousness. It exists from one end of the universe to the other. It allows us to communicate and transfer information, and I would underline the term information there. I'm not talking about particles or waves, but information can actually be transferred from one side of the universe to the other instantaneously, faster basically than the speed of light, and I feel that that all has to do with the fact that light is indeed everywhere at one time. And I feel it's a very positive force. I feel that our consciousness is tied into that. When we tap into that cosmic consciousness, even if it may just last for a fraction of a second, we also tap into that knowledge base. So I do feel that consciousness and light are intimately related.
And you're saying that this helped change you from being a skeptic to where you are now?
I have no doubt at all that there is a higher being, whether you wish to call him or her Allah or God or Krishna. I feel that light is everywhere. It's all powerful. It's all knowing. It has a consciousness. And to me, that's every description we've ever learned about God. So whether they're the same or not, you know, I can't make that step, but I feel that they are intimately related and very possibly the same.
How do you tie this into the possibility of time travel?
Well, if you look at the fact that time does not exist, or put another way, that time stops for any entity that can travel at the speed of light, then we know that time will actually slow if you can approach the speed of light with travel. Einstein used to talk about the traveling twin paradox, and in that story, basically you would have a twin, a pair of twins. One twin, let's call him Twin B, would remain on Earth. Twin A would take off in the Starship Enterprise, traveling, say, at 0.8 the speed of light.
0.8.
Right. 0.8. Let's just use that as an example. With that particular example, what we find is that if the twin was traveling, say, 10 light years to a star, Twin A was traveling 10 light years to a star, returning to Earth, traveling the 10 light years back, and again going at 0.8 the speed of light. Now, we know if he was traveling at the speed of light, it would be 10 years there and 10 years back. But he's not quite going that fast. So we know instead of it taking him 20 years, it's going to take a little longer. We'll just keep it simple. It's going to be longer than 20 years. However, the fact that he is traveling so fast, basically very close to the speed of light, what we find is that instead of it taking 20-plus years, it only takes him really close to about 15 years because of the fact that time will actually slow for him.
Is he going forward or backwards?
Well, let's assume he's going forward.
Okay.
So, and if you looked at that journey without the slowing of time, that twin actually arrives, well, let me back up. If we did not consider the slowing of time, it would actually take that twin 25 years. With the slowing of time, it only takes him 15 years. So that's a difference of 10 years. When he returns back to Earth and meets the twin who remained on Earth, he is now 10 years younger than the twin who remained on Earth.
Right.
So, you know, whether you wish to say he actually traveled into the future, I think that is arguable. But what I would point out is he's traveled into his twin's future. Now, whether you wish to call that a type of time travel, you know, would probably be up to argument. But I can see where it could be expressed that way.
Is it going to be attainable?
Oh, I think it's just a matter of time, yes. Yes, I really do.
I like that pun, by the way.
Yes. Yes, I feel it's very attainable, and it's just a matter of time as we progress with our technology, and you know how fast that's progressing currently.
What does this all mean, though, Lee? What is this light, this power, this energy, this God? What is it?
Well, I basically like to simplify things and just say that I think, and again, this is a form of simplification, but let's assume God is light. Everything would fit. All of the descriptions of God, you know, across the planet in terms of light, that fits. The near-death experience, the being of light, that fits. The fact that quantum physics describes physical light as being omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, and conscious, that fits. And, you know, I don't know any other way to say it. It just seems to be calling out that there's that intimate relationship there. And I think as humans, we are tying into that cosmic consciousness. I feel that explains so much of things that we call supernatural or paranormal, like the collective unconscious, when for a fraction of a second we suddenly know things that we have no right to know, and we can't explain where that information came from. Clairvoyance, psychic powers, I feel that could all be explainable by people with the rare gifts who are able to tap in to that consciousness. I personally have never been able to do that, or at least not.
Not yet. Not yet.
Not yet, and I do.
Have you tried?
I have tried. I personally feel that God, for whatever reasons, has decided that I am best serving a role here on Earth by not having that gift, perhaps to convey to others who also do not have that gift, and I think there are quite a few of us, that, you know, there is a God and that there are tangible reasons for arguing why there is a God, based upon science, in my view, without having to experience the near-death experience or without having to experience psychic powers or gifts. So that's what I feel I'm here on Earth for.
But do you believe, though, that behind all this, there's got to be this intelligence, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, because without it, none of it works, I would assume.
Exactly. Exactly. I think intelligence and light are intertwined. In physics, you know, that is called non-locality, as Lynn McTaggart also refers to it as, that's a physics term, and it indicates how the universe is tied together instantaneously from one corner to the other.
It's ironic. We've got Lynn McTaggart toward the end of this week, too.
Yes, I noticed that, and I feel that her concepts are fully compatible with those of quantum physics and, you know, the research that I've done.
Is there a downside to any of this, Lee? Is there anything here that could go wrong?
Wow.
I mean, because it all sounds good. It all sounds enlightening.
It really does. It really does. Can you give me an example? Because
I mean, if light is so positive and darkness is this negative.
Right.
And, you know, like you said, you're having a difficult time tapping into it. I think I'm able to tap into it.
Yeah.
You can use it for incredible things when you do that.
Yes.
But there's got to be a downside somewhere, because it can't be that good for so many people. Or maybe it is, and I'm missing the obvious.
I'll have to admit, from what I've looked into, I mean, I'm not naive, or at least I hope I'm not naive. I'm sure there is a downside. Maybe it's arrogance. You know, perhaps we might get arrogant if we feel we have all the answers, and I am the first to admit I am far from having all the answers. Every day I continue to read and look for additional answers. But I am sure there is a downside, but right now the positive so far outweighs any negative that, you know, I get so excited talking about this. My thoughts sometimes get ahead of me, and I am just so excited that science now seems to have come around full circle from what it was 30 years ago.
Well, some science. You still have your doubters.
True. But I don't accept their arguments.
But you, years ago, used to be one of them.
I did, and that was before I became enlightened from quantum physics and near death and really all the sacred texts of religion around the planet.
Has it changed you as a person?
Oh, it absolutely has. Right now, if something happens, I would throw a tantrum in the past, and my anger would get best of me. And now I just relax and I explain to myself that there's a reason for what has happened. I may not understand it at the present time. Some people call it karma. But right now I feel that there is a reason for everything, and I truly believe that.
Well, you might be right about that. There is a reason for everything. I think everything happens for a specific reason. Everything to me is fate. There is no chance of coincidence. I mean, you roll the dice sometimes and it comes up 7 or 11 or snake eyes, but
yes.
But I do believe that there are no coincidences. Everything it happens for a reason, whether we summon it up, make it happen, or the forces make it happen.
Exactly. In fact, I love the way you phrased that at the end, because I'm obsessive compulsive, as many physicians and nurses are. And I always felt I had to plan ahead. I always felt I had to be making decisions
Backup plans.
And over the last 20 years, if I have a difficult decision to make, the best thing I can do now is nothing.
Oh, Lee, you got to hear about my compulsion with burned-out light bulbs. We'll tell you about that when we come back.